Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have a wonderful show in store for you today. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap today. We're going to do a special tribute to Don Cornelius, Love, Peace, and Soul Train. Then we take a look at a man fit for a king. That's right, Bishop Eddie Long. Also, another insensitive teacher. This time, it's not the New South, but it's Minnesota. Also, what is going on with the Susan G. Komen Foundation? The stock market is at all-time highs. The unemployment is trending down. It looks like American companies are hiring again. Is this good news for President Obama? So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. And I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. I also want to let you know that I have a chat room open out here. That's right. You can leave your comments or ask questions out there in the chat room. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. So before we get started today, I want to say our condolences goes out to the family of Don Cornelius. Of course, Don Cornelius, the creator and longtime host of the groundbreaking music show Soul Train, has died. He was 75. Now, according to the New York Times, the police responded to reports of gunshots at Cornelius' home. They found Cornelius with a gunshot wound to the head that appeared to be self-inflicted, according to the Los Angeles County Coroner. A radio news announcer by trade, Cornelius began moonlighting at WCIU-TV in the 1960s. While there, he toyed with the idea of creating an African-American version of American Bandstand, Dick Clark's influential music show, with live dancing 5 days a week. On August 17, 1970, the first episode of Soul Train premiered on the station, and by the following year, it was being syndicated in other markets. If I saw American Bandstand, I saw dancing, and I knew black kids can dance better. And I saw white artists, and I knew black artists make better music. And if I saw white hosts, I knew black hosts could project a hipper line of speech. And I did know all these things, then it was reasonable to try, he told the Associated Press in 1995. Soul Train would go on to become the longest running nationally syndicated show in history, airing from 1971 through 2006. Cornelius held down the hosting duties for most of that run, but before stepping away in 1993, he remained as the program's executive producer and expanded the brand into an annual award show. Again, may God continue to bless his family, and of course, our hearts go out to him. First up, here's a story that keeps creeping up. Now, first, it was Georgia. Now, it's St. Paul, Minnesota. This is one is about an elementary school teacher who faces probe after telling his class it's easier to teach poor white kids than poor black kids. Now, the Daily Mail reported that Tim Olmstead, a sixth grade teacher at Heights Community School in St. Paul, Minnesota, allegedly called his students fat, black, and stupid. But he didn't stop there, and it wasn't a one-time thing. He told another black girl she would end up standing on a street corner begging for money. One parent repeatedly complained about Olmstead and got nowhere with the administration and is now demanding that the principal and Olmstead be fired. Latasha Tolbert said that the racist remarks started in her daughter's class several months ago, and she has met school officials dozens of times and eventually requested her daughter be moved to a different class. Tolbert and three other parents have obtained legal representation to fight the school. The attorney is necessary because Olmstead is out of paid administrative leave. Olmstead, you're a bully. It's one thing to have this type of exchange with adults, but children? They are still growing and discovering the world, and to be met with this abuse is disturbing to the fabric of a child. You're a disgrace and abomination to the education system. So hats off to you, Tolbert. You can get justice sitting down. Your diligence will pay off. 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712 if you want to weigh in on this. Also, in a strange turn of events, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation has had one of the most bizarre weeks in terms of public relations of any organization in recent memory. Now, on Friday, Komen announced it would reverse his decision to block most of his grants to Planned Parenthood, which had created a widely discussed controversy. Komen initially said it had cut the group off because Planned Parenthood is the subject of the congressional inquiry into purported use of federal funding to perform abortions. But the about face doesn't mean Komen's troubles are now over. Rebuilding the damage done to his image will be a formidable task. Now, I wonder why such an attack on Planned Parenthood. It's been going on for quite some time. To weigh in, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And speaking of strange, Bishop Eddie Long has been called anointed, but he has recently been awarded another title. And there's a video going around, and pretty much viral by now, that says he is now a king. I don't know if you saw this or not, but the bishop was wrapped in a Holocaust Torah and crowned a king during a recent Sunday ceremony at New Birth Missionary Baptist Church. Of course, it's the church in Atlanta. Now, a visiting rabbi wrapped the bishop in the Torah, and which he said was recovered during the Holocaust. The rabbi then directed four men to lift the seated king, sitting bishop, in his chair and parade him around in a new birth congregation. Now, what was disturbing to me about this is the fact that they held him up and walked him around in this bizarre fashion, and all of the congregation was cheering and clapping and rooting this type of behavior on. He is a king, they said. God blessed him. He's a humble man, but in his kinship royalty, Rabbi Ralph said. What do you think about this? Did you see the video? If not, go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com and take a look at the video. The video is of Bishop Eddie Long being wrapped around this quote-unquote ancient Holocaust Torah. And after they wrapped him around it, they put this, they had this pomp and circumstance around the situation. And then they set him down in a chair. And then they had men lift him up. What do you think about this? I was shocked. On the other side of the break, we're going to open up the phone lines and we're going to let you weigh in. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer and chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
First of all, let's talk about the bishop. All I can say is, wow. So, what's going on here with the bishop?
I don't know what's going on with the bishop. You know, I couldn't even really get through watching the whole, I guess for lack of a better word, ceremony, because I just felt it was so out of order. And I couldn't watch all of it because I felt like I was, in watching it, I was somewhat in agreement with what they were doing. And so I didn't want to, you know, give off any wrong signals or nothing to the, to the atmosphere that I thought this was okay. So I actually couldn't even finish watching the whole thing. I think once they started unwrapping and I definitely didn't see it when they began to carry him around. I mean, I've seen it, but I didn't sit down and watch it in its entirety like that. I just couldn't even bring myself to do it. Some things is just sick, and you just don't understand it. And it was just too much for me.
Hey, but it's his church, though, right? I mean, he could do what he wanted to in his own church, right?
Well, there are some, you know, guidelines, though. Any church, if it's done in order, falls under, you know, the direction of some other governing body. And so there are some things that are allowed and some things that are not based on what governing body, you know, is presiding over you. Now, he may have branched off and is doing his own thing and isn't sitting under anybody. And if that is, in fact, the case, then, yeah, I guess he can't do whatever he want to do.
So, I mean, this was a kind of crossover between Jews and Christians, right? I mean, what was the purpose of a ceremony like this?
That's just it. I have no idea. I mean, here you have a man who, for basically the entire last year, has been embattled in some sort of a scandal or another for the last year. And so you would think that he would quietly go away into the night instead of, you know, every 6 to 8 weeks he's placing himself back in the spotlight. You would think he'd just go somewhere and sit down because he's been given opportunity to redeem and for redemption. You know, Christians believe in redemption. We give you a chance, you know, to come back and, you know, get yourself back right. Excuse me. And every time he, you know, there's a sense of, okay, he might have settled down, got his lesson, got his whooping, and he's going to, you know, go and turn the corner, and then he does something like this.
Is he trying to mask the whole idea of the child molestation or the sexual allegations that were imposed against him? I mean, is he trying to kind of overshadow, you know, that with this new debacle?
Well, this doesn't overshadow it. It gives credence to what the young men are saying, that he calls himself, you know, he's some sort of deity or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it doesn't, you know, cancel that out or make that less believable. It makes it more believable because he's made himself be this grandiose person. I mean, a king, really?
Right.
Really?
right.
I mean, who does that?
Yeah. Well, obviously the bishop does, and so
obviously, I missed it. I don't think in all my years of ever going to church, and I've been in church my entire life, and I've been around church people and church ministries and situations and circumstances, and I've seen some crazy things happen in my day, but this by far is it. I've never seen a pastor who professes to be a bishop. Now he's a king. I've just never seen it. It's I can't put it all together. I can't even get my words right because it's just too much.
But you use the term deity, and it seems to me that he is trying to put himself on that level. He's trying to project this grandiose mentality on the people, and so it's interesting to see him behave in this manner when he had, you know, all this quote-unquote power. Now he seems like he's trying to elevate himself above that. We're going to go to the phone lines real quick and take some calls. Caller, last four, 7102. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is the Esquire Abbey, the city of Detroit. As New Bud said, it's been a long time. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Absolutely wonderful. Glad you can join us today. How's it going?
Oh, you know what? It's a rough ride up, and on this upcoming week, they're going to announce the school closings in the Detroit Public School District, known as the Motor City. We have been changed. No one else told us that our district name was changed. We're called Detroit City Schools, so we're under the rule and the guise of the mayor, and we didn't even know it. 15 schools are going to be closing before the end of the year. How you like that?
Wow, that's terrible. That's terrible. So have you heard about Bishop Eddie Long, and have you seen the pomp and circumstance about making him a king?
You know something? It goes back to those people who don't believe in the fulfillment of the Holy Scriptures. You would definitely know that this is a great example of the great falling away, that many false prophets are going to come saying that they are the Christ. Literally, Bishop Long is trying to say that he is the Christ. And, you know, his actions, his demeanor, his behavior, his guys reminds me of a popular old guy back from the 70s, J.J., Jim Jones. That's the next step for him.
Mm.
And anybody that's following him, they better check theyself before they end up wrecking theyself. Because guy does not know. Man came out the same trick bag, the narcissistic personality disorder, the catatonic disposition. This man is headed down that same path of destruction. Who can ever forget Guyana? Who could ever forget that?
So, Jimmy, Abby brings up a great point about, and we saw his behavior, but what about the people following him? I mean, can they see or are they blinded?
Well, I think they're, you know, I don't want to judge them. I'm just going to give my opinion. If I was a member of that body and I had my own relationship with Christ and not just my relationship with a pastor, I would not still be a member of that congregation, because my relationship with Christ is what's most important, and the teachings of the scripture is what's most important. So when we begin to place man above what the Bible says, then we've done ourselves a disservice. And, you know, it could be a lot of reasons. I mean, I know a lot of reasons why people stay in churches, and a whole host of things are going on. But if you have a relationship, you know, you should have – God gives you a spirit of discernment, and he speaks to you in such a way that it's real clear. You know, that something in this, as you say, Patrick, all the time, something in this milk ain't clean. Something about that process, if you just look at it from just an untrained, even if you're a non-believer will look at that as like, a king? That doesn't make sense. They're not kings in the church. You know, so for church people to sit there who claim to have such a relationship and an understanding, it's sad more than anything. I really feel sorry for those people.
They were standing there and clapping
and cheering. This is something to be proud of.
Now, what's disturbing to me, the most thing that's disturbing to me is the fact that when you look around at all of the people that were encouraging him and pretty much, you know, giving him the nod like this was okay, it makes me wonder, what are they teaching in that church? You know?
You know, as a Bible teacher, can I kind of elaborate on that? Because I am a teacher of scripture, and I know hermeneutics. I'm studying the Torah. I can tell you what it is, Patrick and Gina and listening audience. The fact that number one is this. Go to the book of Romans, the first chapter. It says, you know what, when they knew God, at one time, just like Jim Jones, he knew God. But, but at the same time, he didn't got a relationship with him. When people don't have a true relationship with their creator and they're not in touch with him, it's a bunch of church folks. But there's very few Christians.
Preach.
The Christians follow the line. They walk the line while they talk the line and chalk the line. They're not going to let some false, you know, New Age Messiah come and turn their head, because they know science. They know reputation. They know behavior. They have wisdom. They have discernment. These people are blind because they're looking for a hope beyond what they're experiencing. He's appeasing to their emotions. And when you stimulate people's emotions, you check it out, the alpha, the beta, the delta, the gamma, the theta waves, stimulating the brain, you'll progress in, you know, attributes, certain behaviors that are not nominal. And he's got these people brainwashed. He has them mesmerized. There ain't nothing he's putting in the Kool-Aid, perhaps, but he's getting to that point. And these people are looking for something that's not there. They're living in a fantasy world instead of coming down to reality, searching the scriptures that they believe they have eternal life. But these are the testimonies of the Lord Jesus Christ. He told you about false prophets. He told you raven and wolves in sheep's clothing. He told you to beware, watch the signs. These are the fruits of the spirit, and these are the fruits of the flesh. So when you don't have common sense to take your Bible off the shelf, as opposed to decorate the shelf and take it and put it to the best use possible, you're going to fall victim of your own delegation, of your own circumstance. He ain't been in their arms. He ain't making them. He ain't breaking them. He's just persuading them. It's a form of mind control. It's a form of witchcraft.
Yes, indeed. Mm. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to change the conversation a little bit about this situation with another teacher that's pretty much destroying the esteem of these students by talking down to them and calling them fat, black, and stupid. Yeah, that's right. You heard it right. A teacher calling his student fat, black, and stupid. We're going to take your calls next. The number to call is 323-580-5712. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and AskGema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, AskGema. And AskGema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we reported on an issue in Georgia where a teacher was teaching math using slaves, basically. So, of course, a lot of people thought that was kind of insensitive of the teacher's part. And then just last week, in the same state of Georgia, you had a teacher that was having third graders going around catching each other as slaves, playing masters and slaves and just playing a game in that sort of fashion. This week, we have a teacher again that's coming out calling his student fat, black, and stupid. But he didn't stop there. He told another black girl that she would end up standing on a street corner begging for money. Abby, your mic is hot. Jimmy, your mic is hot. What do you think about this?
You know something, first of all, a couple of questions, Patrick, with all due honor. You're one of the greatest talk show hosts on the network. Let me say that. What is the ethnicity of this teacher?
He's a white male.
Okay, and it's down perhaps on one of the most racist and segregated states that there is. People just don't know it. He needs his ass fired from his in Timbuktu. And I blame those parents because you know what? Children come home and they give their parents reports. And first of all, my question is, where are the parents in this issue? Because somebody somewhere had to went back and report this information to their parents. And
okay,
we know
that's,
sometimes
that's
administration...
That's a good question. Well,
hey,
in this particular instance, the parent went to the school several times complaining about this particular teacher.
Hmm. And,
and not, and then not only that, but three other parents have also obtained legal representation to fight the school, and it's because they have not done anything about this up until now. Now it's starting to get a little bit more attention, and now people are starting to take action. So since that time, the teacher has, of course, been placed on administrative leave. But the fact of the matter still remains that he has been able to conduct himself in this fashion for an extended period of time.
No. First of all, you know, I'm going to tell you why they deal with issues like that in the state. We have our issues, but at the same time, we have justice that is fair and equilateral. In this case, those parents, when they didn't get the rightful response from the school, their next step was to go down to the school board. And during the school board meetings, to stand up, because they do give you rightful referendum to make a two-minute statement concerning whatever issue is called the open mic forum. They should have brought this public to the school board and let them know that they're going to take action. They're going to protest this school. They want action immediately. Now, when you go to those board meetings, from my experience, there is a lot of media coverage there because they think we don't know how to act in collective establishments anyway, so that's why the media is there, quote, unquote, me not. They should have went to that board meeting and publicized this individual and the school. And then after doing that, they could have went to their State Department of Education and made a complaint against that establishment and demanded, because here we do have a Justice Department that will do a rightful investigation of that school. And not only would that teacher not only been taken off administrative leave and fired, they would have got rid of that administrator, because that administrator is knowledgeable of what's going on.
Yeah, I have to agree with you.
They need to take some action.
Jane, what do you think about this whole issue? I mean, in the context, in the broader context of this happening more than once when it comes to race relations of teachers and the very influential minds of students?
Well, I think, you know, it starts early in terms of how they try to indoctrinate our young students on a, you know, starts early. And this is just nothing more than another attempt to belittle, degrade, and make someone feel insignificant, so that then they won't come back to school, and then, you know, they can fall into the stereotypes of what happens when you drop out of school. So, you know, it's just it has so many layers to it that, you know, I agree that there's no way my child could come home and tell me that this is what his teacher said, and I'm not up at that school jumping on top. I would probably get arrested, because there's no way that teacher is going to continue to educate my child. It's not possible. I don't care what they say.
No.
So,
that's fine.
You know, I think, you know, parents have to, you know, hear their children out and ask questions to get to the bottom of, you know, what's going on. And then based on what you get, then you make your next move. But we can't sit back, because somewhere along the line, that teacher thought that was okay, which means that probably wasn't the first time he's done it before.
Right.
You know, somewhere along the line, he's done that before, and nobody challenged him, or nobody made a big deal out of it. And so now, you know, he's trying to figure out, well, what's the big deal, you know? And so therein lies the problem.
So I do want to ask this question, though, Abby, and I want you to feel this one. Is in a lot of cases, instances like this, parents really don't understand the system. For example, I take my child to school. I know that teachers are supposed to conduct themselves in an appropriate manner with my child. But if something happens, I immediately get into an emotional state and I act out, or I get angry, but I don't follow proper protocol because, A, I don't understand, you know, what my rights are as a parent. But B, more importantly, I'm upset and can't think rationally. So I want you to feel this question. What are the appropriate steps one should take when they're faced with situations like this?
Number one is this, and this is a sad and it's bad. Most parents, the districts have reported, they get less than 30% turnout during parent meetings and even 20% turnout when there's parent-teacher conference. So there's a breakdown in communication, appropriations right there, number one. Those communications need to be strengthened and heightened, and parental involvement is a key element so that you will know at the beginning, early on, what your rights, your roles, and your responsibility as a parent is, because actually the schools are the property of the parents. Why? Because the commodities are the children. They are the investments. So parents have a much larger voice than they know. But if they're not there to receive this information, how will they get it? You know, it's like it's a breakdown and they don't have time. And some people say, well, you know what, I would come up to school, but I have to work and provide. Yes, but at the same time, too, you have a voice. You have posture. You have, you know, the ability to be the change agent at that school. Parents have got to be on lockdown and be receptive of what their children are saying and slow down and start setting that priority. So when situations like that happen, like first time around, that teacher should have been kicked out first time around, along with that administrator. But because sometimes parents say, well, you know, I got better things to do. And even so, and I hate to say this as an educator and being a parent too, a lot of times we don't even communicate with our children. Our children tell us something happens in school. Yeah, yeah, right. Okay, well, you know what to do. If it's not somebody, you know, Buku's cousin trying to kick your butt and his mom up there to stop you down, I don't have time. But there'll be some garbage and some mess with another child. Then they're up there first and foremost. But when it comes to the issues happening within the school, they say, like, hey, I don't have time for that. That's for the teachers to do. And that is so wrong. Parents need to start setting their priorities. We had an incident here, and I'm going to turn it back over to you. It was a few years back when my daughter was in high school. And this teacher, I had heard that he was racist, so you know I had him under the microscope. I was like Miss James Bond, watching every move that man makes. I was making impromptu visits, Patrick. And so I actually heard him utilize the scenario of social Darwinism. And then he got into the phrase scenario talking about the dominant class and the recessive class. And I'm not no dummy myself. And he was saying that, you know, blacks at that time were considered less than equivalent to their white masters. They had to have a white master because they were ignorant. And I'm listening. I watched through the door, and I'm listening to it. I'm looking at my daughter. She raised her hand, and she was redder than a bee. And she said, put your hand down. I'm not through. I'm not through. And the derogatory language that he used, sit down. Don't you understand what sit down means? And he was an Anglo-Saxon man. You know what? I lost my scruples, and I forgot all of my authenticity as an educator. And I stepped in the room. I said, excuse me, can I speak with you for a moment? And he was looking like, uh-oh, you know what, an angry black woman, I'm in trouble. Long story short, I called him out in the hall. I said, you know what, I heard what you said, and I don't appreciate it. I said, you're calling our children monkeys. You're saying that they're at the bottom of the evolutionary chain, their ancestors. You will not get away with this. And the funny thing is that the administrator of the school, you know, and I'm not going to call the name of the school because they closed down. I had a little bit of something to do with it, too. I called him to the attention of what this man was doing. He said, well, he has to teach science from a theoretical level. You know, he's a university professor. Excuse me, I said, I don't give a damn what he is. He's not going to teach our children that they're at the bottom of the evolutionary chain and that, you know, they're less than homo erectus. They're homo sapiens and less than that. I said, if you accept him, you're no better than he is. I said, you're nothing but a fruit-filled Oreo cookie yourself. And I was angry about it. And I had got together with the parents at the PTA. We signed a petition and demanded that that teacher be put out. And trust me to tell you, we called Wayne County Research, who was the educational association that was over our district after they closed the area offices. They had a meeting, closed-door meeting, with us parents. And when I got through laying the smack down the following week, he was gone.
That's good. So, Jamie, talk to me about the perspective of the parent. The importance of getting involved early and often in the school system so you can see these early warning signs.
Well, as often as you can, you should find your way up to your child's school. And as often as you can, whether it's something planned or if you get a day off and you go up there for lunch, those the administrators and those people in their front office, they need to know you. They need to be able to say who you are, whose parent you are, because that lets them know that you are interested in what's going on in your child's life, that you are concerned about what's going on in your child's life, and that you're not going to take a whole bunch of nonsense. But if you know, so that's the role a parent can play. And I know there's a lot of times parents are busy and working two and three jobs, and they got all this going on. But I guarantee you, if you can find the time on a day that you're probably tired and just want to go to sleep, but instead you just go up there that morning before you lay down. You know, if you work in a night job, when you get off in the morning and you're taking the child to school or whatever, just run in the school building. Just see what's even going on see what the school looks like. You know, that tells you a lot as well. You know, I'm a firm believer in everything having its place. And I believe if things are out of place, like trash in the hallway, then there's no way you can tell me that you are keeping my child safe on a day-to-day basis, because trash doesn't belong in the hallway. And if nobody in that school outside of the janitor is picking up trash, then, somebody else is not doing their job. So it's those simple things you can do. Go have lunch. See how the cafeteria is ran. And I have concerns about what happened at my son's school during lunchtime. It's just, to me, it's a tad bit chaotic. And I don't think the people in there want to be in there. Like, it's a chore for them to have lunchroom duty. And you can see it based on how they talk to the children. And so, you know, I've made a few, you know, inquiries a few times for my son. So I think parents have to take the time, and they have to make the time to be available. And when it's those parent-teacher conferences, if you can't make it in person, make the phone call. Take the extra step so that they know that you are committed to your child's education and that you are concerned about the environment in which he's spending so much time in. You know, you look at the fact that school starts at 8 o'clock or, you know, 7:50, and they're there all day till 3:15 in the evening, and sometimes later if they're in an after-school program. You know, that's a lot of time that somebody else has your child.
You know, what I like what Abby said earlier about the fact that there should be some type of priority, setting a priority, meaning that, I know I'm busy. Yeah, I know I have work. Yeah, I know I have all these other things going on in my life. But my child should be just as important as those other things. My involvement in his life should be just as important as those other things. So, you know, granted, I believe that the priority setting should be your child should be a part of that as well as those other things. I'm going to take another call here.
Cadavers up, and there's a bunch of dead stets up in here. Let me go ahead and take
Marshall, your mic is hot.
What's going on?
Hey, everything is wonderful. Welcome to the show. You're on with Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
What did you say again?
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Ghost.
Okay, where are you calling from?
Stupid sack of crap.
All right. So, as I was saying, I think that there should be a priority for parents, just like they're in their lives with their children, just like there are priorities for their job, just like there's a priority for their education, just like there's a priority for everything that they're involved with. But setting that priority is very important. Because when you do that, you let everybody know my child is just as important as my job or my career or my education in doing that. So I thought that was very powerful that Abby said that. Abby, so you mentioned parent meetings. What other steps can a parent take to make sure that they can see these early warning signs? Okay, I think we lost her. But all right, so Jim, what do you think?
Connection.
Okay, there you go. Abby, say again.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes, I'll say it again. Making that impromptu visitation, you know, the first day of school, you know, a lot of parents don't think, Patrick, and this is what really gets me. You know, this is the first time your child's attending a school, a new school year. You don't know who's at that school, whether the same administrators there, the same teachers, same staff. You need to get familiarized early on with that school. Make yourself known. You know, hi, how are you? My name is such and such and such. My child is so and so and so and so. You're going to be seeing a lot of me. And, you know, and let them know, because there's something about when schools recognize when a parent is very involved, they're going to be on their best behavior, not only as it relates to your child, but to other children. Second thing, get to know your child's teacher. You know, whether it's just coming in saying hello, I want to be able to lend a hand, what can I do to help you to do a great job? You know, not just saying, teacher, you're responsible. You're on your own. You got my child. You're getting a paycheck, you know. But no, let them know, hey, we're sharing this because I'm my first child's teacher. We as parents, we are the first child's teacher in the first place.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's, That's right. So we're just as important as the classroom instructor, and let them know that, and kind of share some information about your child. You know, Daryl sometimes has an issue with tying his shoes over and over again. Sometimes he likes to get up and walk. You call me. Give her that phone number. Call me. If there's a problem, I will be up here quick, fast, and in a hurry. You won't have to worry. Next thing you need to do is to attend the parent meetings. It's so sad and it's so bad that at the PTA meetings at the local school level, it's literally non-existent with parent participation, not unless you're paying them a stipend or you've given out something by way of door prizes. Then they may show up, but once they get the prizes and eat the food, they're gone. There needs to be some type of centimeterity requirement that parents do attend meetings when their children are at their school, so you'll know what the school policies, their levels of operation, what your rights are as parents. You need to attend those meetings. Parent-teacher conference. Sometimes we can't make parent-teacher conferences, but, you know, we need to schedule the previous day. I mean, to say, okay, I couldn't make the conference. Can I have 15 minutes of your time during your lunch? I'll do lunch with you. When teachers and staff know that you're a concerned parent, they will look at you in a different perspective. They will be watchful. They'll take pride in what they're doing. And then we need to be able to communicate with our children. And it's sad, you know, even to some of the little children in early childhood, you know, say, my mama doesn't talk to me. So they come to school bursting with energy. You know, the children are trying to tell their parents, maybe somebody did something to them. They cut them off. You know, I'm tired. Leave me alone. Go and look at television. The television is the communication piece in the household. Parents, know what's going on in your child's life. If you want to know your child's friends, talk to them. Let them tell you what happened during the day, what was said to them, what was done to them, and you communicate back. And be investigative. Be nosy. It's okay to be nosy. And then communicate and connect that piece. And if something don't sound right, you definitely make sure that you investigate it. Because, you know, when my daughter had told me something once about what he had said, I didn't let it slip. That made really, really curious about what was going on. Then I witnessed it hands-on myself, and I think that's a great example. Make yourself known. Don't be afraid to step up and step out, because our children are too precious to put in a high level of risk like that.
Yeah, I have to definitely agree with you. I want to shift now to something that's been in the news all week long, and I really want to get your take on this, because what happened with the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation is interesting, because a lot of people have been jabbing at Planned Parenthood for the last few years, in fact. And yes, so it seems like to me this was the final straw that broke the camel's back when they decided to pull that funding away from Planned Parenthood. And then all of a sudden, all these people kind of spoke out in ways that I've never seen in a long time before, especially regarding this issue. So, Jimmy, what happened here? Why this time as opposed to times before when everybody had been taking a stab at Planned Parenthood?
What was the first part of the question? Why what?
Why now? Why now that they're starting to stand up, if you will, on a national basis for Planned Parenthood, as before when you hear them talk about, you know, pulling funding or bashing Planned Parenthood? He has really not gotten this much traction. Why now?
Well, I think two reasons. I think the main reason was that it appeared as though it was not based on fact and not based on something that made sense. So just from the onset, the appearance was that, wait a minute, you're pulling their funding because they're being investigated? And then things came out that they were still funding other institutions that were being investigated, i.e. Penn State University. So that didn't, as you said, that part of the milk wasn't clean. And then you're talking about Planned Parenthood does much more than just abortion. As a matter of fact, it's only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does. So to try to lump all that in there together, and then you're saying you're talking about a group of people that is already underserved, because Planned Parenthood's primary clients are low-income black people, brown people, and low-income white people as well, that go to Planned Parenthood for more than just breast exams. So, you know, Planned Parenthood is just that, Planned Parenthood. So it talks about you get information around an array of things. And so when the message came out that you're going to stop funding from one of your largest organizations that provides these free services or low-cost services to a group of people that's already underserved, that already has a higher probability of having some form of breast cancer anyway, that was just outrageous. And it was totally, and once people began to find out who these people were, who the CEO was, who the director was, and what their political ties was, then it became political. And that's where they made their mistake, is that they didn't think people were going to do their due diligence and was just going to say, oh, yeah, we don't want our money going to an abortion. But when you think about it, and all the data shows you that, you know, like I said, 3% of what they do is around abortions, and you're going to cut off funding to an organization that is providing the service that you say is part of your mission.
Yeah, yeah. So a little background for the viewers or listeners out there is the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation had one of the worst weeks in terms of public relations in recent memory. And on Friday, Komen announced it will reverse its decision to block most of its grants to Planned Parenthood, which had created a widely discussed controversy. Komen initially said it would cut the group off because Planned Parenthood is the subject of a congressional inquiry into purported use of federal funding to perform abortions. So hence what Jimmy was talking about is that they said one thing to mask the fact that they were pulling funding away. But the reality is Planned Parenthood only provides 3%. That's only probably less than 3% of their true services.
That's funny.
People are tired of this smokescreen about abortions and blaming abortion on that so they can, you know, take a stab at Planned Parenthood when in fact Planned Parenthood provide a lot of great services for women. And so, you know, I'm glad to see people come out and speak about this. Abby, you any comments?
Yes, indeed. You know, Planned Parenthood in our city did a whole lot more than just, like you said, the abortion perspective. That's why people highlight, that's a Republican initiation. That's their strong point. They have such a weak agenda, quote, unquote, me not. Planned Parenthood has been instrumental in our educational community within the high school ramifications. You know, they've had presenters to come out and talk to young women about contraceptive use, talk to them about HIV prevention and STD prevention, you know, and things of that measure. And they have been very instrumental in community establishments and associations, especially within the public school sector, because this is the highest level of unplanned pregnancies do happen, whether we like it or not. You know, with the flesh, that's born of the flesh is flesh. That's, we're just born in spirit is spirit. We live in a real body, an earthly shell. They give it to them straight, and they give the parents a lot of supporting guidelines as it, you know, relates to contraceptive use and talking to their children about sex, because that's the area that so many young people, they want to know before we can get down to the get down and tell them about it. They've already went and did it. Why? Because they're giving in to peer pressure, and the hormonal imbalances and incoherencies are taking over. So Planned Parenthood has done a lot in the way of educating our young people about sexual responsibility and encouraging, you know, our young women to remain abstinent until they get into a real-to-life relationship. You know, so I think they've done an instrumental job, and, you know, it's a Republican initiation because they just hate this organization with a passion.
I know. So, Jimmy, do you think this is the last time that they will try something of this magnitude, or do you think they will find other ways of trying to attack Planned Parenthood so they can push their political agenda?
Well, here's the thing. You know, anybody – now, what they're running into now is that they are not going to be able to just say something and people believe it. So, and that's what they've been able to do for so long because, we're some of the most uninformed people in the world. And so now people have access to too much information and access to too many ways of getting information. And the moment somebody says something, it's either tweeted, it's on Facebook, it's on the news, it's somewhere in the atmosphere almost as soon as it comes out of somebody's mouth. So now people can say, wait a minute, I saw, you know, that it's real clear that there's no federal dollars that's going towards this. So what is the real attack against Planned Parenthood? And so when you talk about all that Planned Parenthood does, as Abby was saying, it does more than that. And there's so many services and so many things that people get from it that some of the very people that was probably up in arms was like, well, wait a minute, am I still going to be able to go and get, you know, my low-cost birth control or my low-cost right. you know, pap smear, you know, and all the things that women have to. And see, when you talk about women, and here's the thing that that's the kicker that nobody wants to talk about. The elephant in the room is that what is this issue about my womb that keeps coming up in the conversation? What is it about my womb that you feel as though you need to dictate what I can do with it? And so, you know, and so when you're looking at the fact that you're talking about women's health issues, and so if I'm not able to get that breast exam, I'm now no longer able to get my pap smear, which helps find out other issues going on as well, whether or not I have some sort of sexually transmitted disease, whether or not I have some sort of cancer cells growing. You know, there's so many. There were so many services that was going to be impacted by that decision. And women knew that it could just not be. I mean, and so as Nancy Pelosi said, when women stand up and speak, enough is enough now. You've already won a turn back Roe versus Wade, and you've been talking about that for the last, you know, however many years. And every election cycle, it comes up, and you want to talk about the family, and you want to make all these declarations about what I can do with my womb, but then when my child gets here, you don't want to help me take care of it. But you want to tell me I got to have it,
but
then when it gets here and I need some help, you telling me I'm lazy and trifling and I'm out having too many kids.
Yeah, so, we got a comment in the chat room here. I want to pose to both of you right now, and Abby, I'll let you respond first, and Gina, we'll follow up with you so you can continue your train of thought. But the question is posed that it might be 3% of their budget for abortions, but what does that add up to since 1973? And as Christians, even if it's 1% or less, not speaking politically, even 1% of the budget is much too much when it's murder. What do you say about that? That's coming from
I've always questioned if murder is murder, then how do we continue to fund executions?
That's right. That's a murder. And he'd be without sin, let him cast the first stone. See, it's a different same scenario. People get me, as Gene was saying, you know, how are you going to fund capital murder? And they look at the terminology and the terse of things. First of all, it's my right between me and the Creator who made me. You know, whether or not, you know, to abort a child, that's something that I would just say, hey, I'm going to go out in the street, I'm going to have unprotected sex, I'm going to get pregnant. If I get pregnant, I'm going to follow up with an abortion. It's not something a person plans to do. It's not something that someone preoccupies themselves to do. But life happens, situations happen, because we're born of the flesh. We have a few days and full of trouble. And sometimes those troubles overwhelm us. And in a state of emergency where a woman is raped, where she is, you know, sodomized, and even, you know, when sperm hits the egg, whether it's consensual or not, pregnancy does happen. Who wants to be reminded of what happened to them? Who wants to relive the nightmare, knowing you're going to look at this child, and we have the love of God within us, but we're also flesh. We haven't made it to divinity yet. We're on our way. But at the same time, want to be reminded of what has happened. So, therefore, if this is the option, or perhaps that child could come here with an impairment as a result of such an action, you know, why, who is to judge to say that I'm a murderer? I didn't just consent to get up and just have consensual sex and decide to take it as an option. No, Christianity has very little to do with that. It's the sobriety of mind. God understands when people misunderstand, and we need to just set those priorities in order. And I'm so sick and tired of these conventional so-called self-professed Christians trying to group that in the same category. Murder that I categorize with thou shalt not kill, it means that when a person says something to you or does an act in a way that is formidable, you're not supposed to go out there and say, hey, this is where I even score, and blow their brains out or stab them to death. That is murder. So at the same time, if they want to be so holier than thou, why is it, like Gina said, would you take this man who some say has committed this crime, and you weren't there, judge not that you be not judged, and you're going to sentence him to death, you begin to be sending an innocent man to the electric chair, you know, to the gas chamber. Is that fair? We only have one judge, and that's God, and he's going to judge the quick and the dead.
Okay. I mean, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So I want to follow up with that same line of questioning, because Faith E responds with, thou shalt not kill. Christians, and she goes to say, or he goes on to say, that never mind Eddie Long being hooped up on some idiot shyster shoulders, but thou shalt not kill. So what do you make about the argument that the scripture clearly says that thou shalt not kill, regardless of if it's in prison for capital murder, or if it's somebody that's living, is acting out of character, or if it's an infant? What do you say that, to the simple fact that thou shalt not kill?
Well, what I say to that simple fact, thou shalt not kill, the Bible speaks of a lot of things that thou shalt not do. And God does not compartmentalize sin. He does not place sin in categories. Man does that. And so one sin isn't any greater than any other sin. God hates the sin, not the sinner. So at any time you have an opportunity to repent, and for and that's a personal thing that you have to do with your relationship with God. Now, is it right?
That's right.
Will you have some sort of consequence for that? I'm sure you will. But you'll have some consequences for committing adultery as well. You'll have some
That's
consequences
right.
for lusting as well. You'll have some consequences for gluttony as well. See, the sin comes with consequences. The type of sin doesn't have anything to do with the you're going to have some sort of consequence. So whether it's abortion, whether it's electrocution, execution, whether it's eating too much, whether it's having sex outside of your marriage, whatever it is,
right.
it is the sin is the issue. And for a country, you know, that's founded on these Christian principles, we tend to decide when we want to be Christ-like. And so we want to be all Christ-like when we're talking about abortion, but we don't want to be Christ-like when it's talking about taking care of the least of these. We don't want to be Christ-like when it's talking about feeding the hungry. And when I was
That's
hungry,
right.
you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me. We forget about that because we call that entitlement. We call that a safety net that got holes in it. So, you know, we can go on and on about it.
That's
but at
right.
the end of the day, at the end of the day, it's your relationship with God. Whom you serve and whom you believe in, whom you will have to answer to. That at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to.
That's right.
All right, we're going to take another break. Time to pay some bills. I would like to encourage everyone to go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective on the stimulating conversation on the current events. Again, that's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word. TaylorMade, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, Talk Radio. TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Of course, you can always Google Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment. You'll listen to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events and AskGMA can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I also like to welcome all our guests out in the chat room. And I want to go ahead and raise the issue that one of the members in the chat room is saying, and then I want to get you all to respond to this as well. And, of course, anyone out there is welcome to join the conversation. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And that is, Fabian is kind of juxtaposing the issue with Bishop Eddie Long, saying that we're focusing our concentration on him, which he's really hasn't done anything, as opposed to focusing our concentration on Planned Parenthood, which, of course, in the eyes of the conversation, I guess they're trying to argue that this 3% is going towards killing children. So I'm interpreting the comments out of the chat room as saying our attention is focused on this debacle of Bishop Eddie Long as opposed to what's happening with Planned Parenthood, and we should be really focusing on Planned Parenthood because they're killing people. Jimmy, you say what?
Well, we're talking about an array of conversations right now, and Bishop Eddie Long just happened to be one of many. And as is the story is around, you know, the teacher saying those things to a student, causing that student to at some point maybe have some low self-esteem and have all sorts of other issues. That's important to talk about as well. How do we help to educate our children? That's, you know, that's another topic. And now we're talking about this. In terms of, you know, was what the Komen Foundation did, was it political? Was it out of, you know, sheer concern about the welfare of women and ensuring that women's health issues are being taken care of, that they're the Susan G. Komen Foundation for a cure or for the cure, then how are you going to cure this set of population just because they receive their services through Planned Parenthood? So I think, you know, I don't think one conversation is what was more important than the other in terms of having the conversation. But any time, you know, wherever you sit on the stance of life and death, anytime a life is lost, yeah, we need to talk about it. But at the same time, you know, it's for every conversation we have about it, is that many people in the world that have that many different opinions. And so at the end of the day, you have to decide for yourself what you will support, what you believe, what you value. And I can't try to make you believe what I believe. I can tell you what I believe. I can live my life a certain way. And at the end of the day, that's all I can do.
You know, I would like to, Abby, I'd like you to field this question here, and it's basically being posed, what would Jesus say? And specifically, what would he sit and justify in killing the baby? So, and this line of questioning is pretty much around how people that advocate for aborting babies. This is the line of questioning that they always come up with. So how would you respond about the fact that they're asking the question, what would Jesus, how would he sit and justify killing of babies?
First of all, he didn't come to destroy the Mosaic Law, but that through him the Mosaic Law would come to life and be fulfilled. But just as it talks about not committing adultery, there was a woman that the Pharisees took to before Jesus and said, you know what, this woman is an adulteress. You know, what's going to be done with her? You know, how would you deal with her? You know, according to the law, this woman's supposed to be stoned. What did Jesus do? Did he say, woman, how many men did you sleep with? Why did you do that? You're wrong. He bent down to the ground. He told him to release her. And they wanted to hold her because they wanted to prosecute her before the witness and the eye of the people to make themselves look so holy and so good. And he bent down to the ground. He said, you know, he was going to write, hypocrites, you without sin, cast the first stone. There is none of us that is without sin. And so if abortion is the sin that so many people want to replicate and you know, because it's idolized on the Republican agenda because they say they're pro-life, well, first of all, let's look at the whole anomaly behind it. You know, was this person sexually assaulted? Did this person receive some degree of injury? Could birthing this child in the world harm this person or cause great pain or suffering to the person and the child? Ask the question. And so if it's done in the way of preserving that person's life and protecting the proclivity of that person, God knows and he understands. And if God doesn't judge, and he can judge because he will judge us all, the quick and the dead, how be that they can take God's place? They're getting out of text, out of touch, out of time. Because you know what? That's between that person and the creator that made them. And each and every one of us is going to be held accountable. But God understands when others misunderstand.
All right. Well, we're gonna shift focus here a little bit. I do like the fact, though, that this conversation is taking place because all too many times we tend to let our emotions get the best of us when we have this stimulating type of dialogue about abortions, especially around abortions, because you know there is, you know, good arguments on both sides. At the end of the day, though, it is really left up to that woman and her body for her to make the decision and for her to live with her choice. So for somebody to impose upon another individual whether they can or cannot do something with their individual liberties that so many people talk about, I think it's very important that we understand the context of allowing an individual to be responsible for their own decision when it comes to their body.
That's right.
Oh, so let's shift now to something that I wanted to talk about, and that's the job numbers. And the president has had a good couple of weeks. He delivered an epic State of the Union, of which the Republicans had no response. And this week, the unemployment rate dropped 0.2%, points to 8.3%. 243,000 new jobs were created in the past month, and the stock market is at an all-time high. More important than the numbers is the trend. It is the seventh straight month of job growth over 100,000, as well as marked increase from December when the economy added 200,000 jobs. Now, is this good news? If this is good news, I should say, why won't the Republicans acknowledge it and move on? Gmo, what's going on here?
Well, you know, it's difficult to say that what he's doing is working because then they won't have an argument anymore. And so does it mean that we can stop working? The answer is no. Does it mean we sit back now and say, whew, we're at 8.3%, we don't have anything else to do? Of course not. There is still much work to be done. There's still much that this president can do. And I hope that as we go into as we're in the middle now or the start of this new Congress, that session, that they will do more to speed up the recovery. But, you know, on the one hand, you know that probably they're not going to, because the speed up the recovery then gives him, you know, some brownie points, and then everybody will vote for him again and say, well, he did it. Well, but, you know, and then on the flip side of that, if we keep things like they are, then it's going to be, you know, their goal is to be a harder fight. You know, they want him to be a one-term president, and so they're not going to do a whole lot to help. And so here we sit. They haven't done a whole lot to help, and yet every decision that he's made, that he decided to make, has been a good decision as it relates to pulling out the auto industry, as it relates to just go ahead on and making some appointments during the recess time, as it putting the line down about the whole jobs and different things along those nature. You know, we've seen some progress, and so, you know, when they say they want to run on the president's record, I don't really think they want to do that, because I don't really think they know how much this man has accomplished in the 3 years he's been in office without a lot of support. Not just from the Republicans, but there's been a couple of times the whole health care fight, you know, lasted so long because there were some Democrats in that fight, you know, that wasn't supportive. And so I really don't think they want to run on his record. They think they do because they want to run on health care. But he's done, when he gets out there and he begins to talk about all the things he's done, women will begin to say, well, wait a minute. You know, that was the first law he signed, was the Lilly Ledbetter law. You know, and so, and there's something to that for equal pay for equal work. We've been fighting for that for a very long time.
That's right.
You know,
that's
so,
right.
You know, there are some things that we need to, you know, they need to really pay attention to, because although they think they want to, you know, go against him on his record, I really don't think they want to. And so these numbers, they're encouraging, as you stated, in terms of just sheer numbers and what's happened over the last however many months has been that we've had continuous growth. That says something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think people really understand what it means, because it's such a big number. But when you look at the context of how many jobs we were losing on the day he took office, and then the amount of jobs that, you know, someone said that if things continued at the rate that they're going, that he will have gained back every job lost
his
administration.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's saying something.
Right. So Abby, where do the Republicans go from here? Do you believe between now and the election that we will be able to have someone from the other side, especially if this trend continues, to give the president some credit?
You know something? Hopefully they will, because you know what? Right now, there's so much dissension within the Republican Party, which is great for the Democratic Party, and to the point that I think the whole anomaly behind what they're doing is going to spell self-destruction. You know, whether they want to admit it or not, this president and his administration, because he worked from the grassroots initiation perspective, getting in touch with the little guy all the way to the top-notch guy and communicating and connecting and really getting involved and doing something about it. Not very many presidents were very proactive in the way of being in touch with each and every person, one level at a time. And I think, you know, rightful referendum for the Republican Party, they want to present a valid argument. They don't need to try to match his record, because there's no match for his record. And on top of all the wonderful things that have been happening with the economy, with GM getting out of the crisis crunching within, with our public school sector really getting the challenging curriculum and the funding that they so long anticipated and prayed for. What about the capture of Osama bin Laden? Not only the capture of this man, but also the eradication of what was deemed as the world's number one most hideous terrorist that ever existed known to mankind. He deserves a lot of accreditation for that, because what Bush failed to do, he definitely accomplished. And not only have we done that, but also look at the international relations level. You know, you got the Palestinians now communicating with the Israelis. You've got, you know, a lot of things being sublime. You know, when the Afghanistan confrontation started, first with George W. Bush Jr. administration, there was hyperbole. The Taliban was the dictatorial presence in that area. Then, you know, you had the Al-Qaeda on the move. Those movements have been neutralized. Why? Because he realizes terrorist organizations, the nuclearistic perspective is that they function only because of poverty. They function because of feeling disseminated from the population, that they're not a part. He's going in and educating these people, providing them with the amenities of life. So this man is also building international relations. The friends that we lost in the Bush era are now coming back to the table saying, you know what, the United States is really about bridging those gaps that were left residual from the previous administration. So, you know what, the Republicans don't have the hope and glory on this perspective.
You know, I agree with you, and I like what you said early on about him investing in the people. I mean, he's really put in the work when it comes to what they call retail politics. I mean, he's been on the ground floor on Google Plus, on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook. Yeah. I mean, he's really engaged with the people. I mean, he's had them over for dinner, basically. He's come to their house. He's been in their backyard. Now, this is as president, not as a campaigner in chief, but as president, he's been doing all this. So he's in an enormous amount of investing in the American people. I mean, he's even taking money out of his own bank account to help people out. You cannot tell me that that kind of investment in American people, that it won't pay off in big dividends. And not to mention that he's not even doing it to get reelected. He's doing it because in my heart, in my mind, that I believe he truly cares about the American people. And so I think that's what you get when you get diversity amongst any organization. Yes. And they were talking about on Up with Chris, Chris Hayes, I think it is. When they kind of laid the landscape of the presidents over the since this nation was founded, and how they have been, you know, pretty much, one race, one religion, other than the time that they had a couple of Catholics in there, and they have one ideology. And so, for the most part, now would you get President Obama in that he's doing things in a non-conventional manner in their minds, and things are not going, you know, they can't predict what he does. He's always been two steps ahead of the Republican Party on each and every case, right? They can't put, but you get that when you have a diverse, a person in your organization. You get that.
Oh, yeah.
You get this free thinking, and you get all of these different advantages, if you will, when you had a diversity in an organization. So President Obama has really done everything that one could ask as a president, in my mind. You know, he learned a lot of lessons early on by trying to work with everybody. He finally, you know, it was finally, you know, evident to him that they were not going to work with him. So he's using the vehicles that at his leisure to get the job done. And he's still being successful. Amongst all of that. But I do want to ask this simple question. Out of all of that good news, do you feel like the economy is taking a turn in the better? What impact has it had on you personally? Jima, I'll let you field that question first.
Well, I felt like things were turning around. I wrote about this in terms of how I remember Christmas of 2010 and, you know, how I don't think Christmas lights went up around my neighborhood until like the week before Christmas. Whereas, you know, this past holiday season, you know, decorations and lights and things in the yards were up, you know, like Thanksgiving weekend. And so for me, I felt like that was a sign because people were feeling better about where they were. It wasn't as down and out as they had been. And so to me, that was a sign. I think things are turning around a little bit at a time. I'm still not understanding the high price of gas, and it just doesn't make any sense to me why gas keeps going up and everything else is making turnarounds, and gas is just going up, and there's some prediction that that's going to be that way, and, you know, it's going to continue to inch up until the summertime, and that's just not going to be good. And, you know, I think there's so on the one hand, you know, I think things are doing well, but I'm cautiously optimistic because there's so many things going on globally that can have an impact on here that I don't think we paid enough attention to until recently. And so I think we have to be real mindful of what's happening over there in those global markets, what's happening in Syria, what's happening in all these countries that have these uprisings going on, and how will it have an impact on how we do business. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic about where we are and what he's doing for the things he has control over here on this side of the ocean. But as things we know tend to, you know, connect and run across each other when they come across the other side, I'm just a little bit concerned about, you know, that global side.
Right. So, Abby, you know, I mentioned in the a few minutes ago about the consistent job growth over so many months, 23 consecutive months of job growth now, 243,000 just in the month of January. So how has it impacted in your life personally? Can you kind of put it in perspective for us from a personal? I know the numbers look good. I know the news media is looking good. But personally, how is it affecting you now?
Well, you know, it's a more, like Gene was saying, a more optimism because the people at one time were very dismal. They were very apprehensive about spending money. They didn't know how they were going to make ends meet. Even, as you know, in the educational community, you know, with the 10% pay cut and the 20% rise in the medical insurance and the other premiums, people were very, very dismal. But since the things have turned around in the month of January, everybody seems to be a little bit more optimistic and that the projection of things really looks positive. But at the same time, too, we know there are some global aspects that do need to be under consideration because OPEC controls the amount and the pricing of the oil, and that's the oil producing and exporting countries, the Arab Emirates, literally, that controls the price of the oil and of the gas. So, but outside of that, you know, everybody seems to be pretty optimistic, and that second time around, everybody's anticipating that life will even improve the more. So slow and steady gets the pace done. And we're just in for a much better America, and I believe that. You know, even with talk now that the educators have lost that 10%, now they're negotiating, you know, because the U.S. Department of Education has gotten involved with the local unions and negotiating to get that money back to the educators because, as President Obama said, you know, to reward educators who are doing a great job and to reward those schools and to encourage children to get into the areas of math and science. This is the highest level of accelerated pace that needs to take place in America. We need future, you know, scientists. We need future researchers, and this is the way to go. So I see life has really improved. People's moods are a little bit less chaotic, they're more focused, and they're being just very, very positive about the future, and I just hope we can continue this pace. And despite what the other party tries to do, nothing can stop us now because, hey, how the song said, there ain't no stopping us now.
So, Abby, let me ask you a follow-up question. It's obvious that we went through a recession, pretty much a deep recession, the Great Recession, some people called it. What did we learn from the Great Recession? If you had to do it all over again, what would you personally do differently this time around? Or if you foresee it coming, what would you do differently?
Well, I would do different, Patrick, and that's an excellent question. First of all, I would be more budgetary-wise. You know, instead of just being frivolous with my money, I would cut. I would cut my expenditures. I would balance my budget. I would be more wise in making decisions about going on long and lavatious trips. I know we all need to have the necessity to get away and escape. I would plan something home-based. Instead of always going out to eat, like a lot of us spend, 30% of our income on eating out. You know, I would just be wise and just, you know, just choose to do meals at home. You know, instead of going to the movies all the time, why don't I just simply use an entertainment spot at home? I would just be more wiser with my budget and conserve, because you never know when a rainy day is going to come, and you need to think rightfully so that you don't fall into a hardship type of situation. I think that sometimes when you get deprivated from something, you then appreciate having the most minimal, you know, and amenities within your grasp. And I think so many of us have gotten spoiled. We got accustomed and, you know, acclimated to a certain degree of lifestyle and frivolous spending. But this gave us a strong and hard wake-up call. Don't take anything for granted. What you have today, if you have a dollar, spend 20 cents today and put 80 cents up, because you never know when the hard time might come again.
Jima, I want you to feel that same question, too, because a lot of times when we go through something and we're successful and coming out the other end, we very seldom take a time to do a retrospective. That's Scrum speak for those out there that know me in my Agile Scrum world. But the retrospective just have us to take a look back and see what were the goods, what were the bads, and what will we change and improve upon. So I ask you the same question. Now that we've come through this thing and we're on the other side of it, whether we go back down or not, we're still on the other side of the Great Recession. What would you do differently?
Personally?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I agree a lot with what Abby said in terms of saving more and not necessarily spending it all on the front end, but, you know, having some left over for just in case. I mean, there's so many ways that we do things just in case, like our insurance. You know, for those of us that have insurance, and you got to have it if you have a car, that's just in case you have an accident. You know, you don't want one.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, why not have a just in case, you know, I lose my job insurance.
Right.
I mean, whatever I got to call it to make it be something real to me. So I think I would do that. You know, I would take what I was making and use it and be a better steward of it. And try to tell that to everyone that I knew my family and friends to also just to be better stewards of what you have, because you never know. I mean, you might think your company that you've been working for the last 20 years is solid and it's doing all the right things, and you come in one day and the doors is closed, you know, and it's nothing that you did, but, you know, that company wasn't as something happened. And so, you know, what are you going to do, you know? And so just having to know and that, you know, I got something to the side that in case something happens, I'm going to be okay. And and still enjoying life, but I don't have to, you know, go to, you know, my favorite restaurant all the time, you know, the highest end place all the time. You know, sometimes I can just go to a, you know, a 3-star. It doesn't have to be 5-star. I mean, you know, so that I don't feel like I'm depriving myself of something. But at the same time, I know I don't have to eat it all today.
You
so
know,
I would, you know, put
you know,
some back.
I would say 3 things that I think I've learned out of the recession. One would be to, as far as entertainment is concerned, I would. And I'm going to start doing this now, and that's why I'm posing the question. But to spend more time with friends and family and use that as a source of my entertainment, to get to know and get to love and participate with those people.
That's
because what happens in the bad times, everybody, you now trying to get to know people or get, you know, and you kind of relegated to that environment, and then you don't know the people well enough, and, you know, and things could go negative there or south there. So to do it, to spend time with them in the good times and to enjoy them, and that way you won't spend a whole lot of money all the time to enjoy yourself.
Right.
So that would be part one. Part two, I would say, is to make more cash purchases. And what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, I did want to go out and get a treadmill, for example. Now, I have an option to go out and use credit to purchase that treadmill, or I have the option to save periodically and make a cash purchase for that treadmill. And the cash purchase will make that will allow me to incrementally save up for it and get it, and then once I make the sale, it's final. As opposed to getting and then this sale could stand out for 10 years on a treadmill that would be old in 5. And so I think that was lesson number 2 for me, and I will be beginning to do that more often, is making cash purchase. And then, you know, number 3, I would say, I would take an opportunity to put a steady stream of savings away. You know, every single pay cycle, every source of income that I get, let's put a steady stream away, because that steady stream began to build over time. And so in my eyes, this recession took about 12 years to take place, or actually about 9 or 10 years to take place, because I remember being in Colorado when I was looking at the housing market, and I was working for a loan officer, or I was working for a company there that was as a loan officer, and the prices of homes were 40% overpriced then. And so as the years began to progress, it began to get just bigger and bigger, and just and was a bubble. The same thing happened to the tech industry. It was a bubble there. So, you know, although this has been, you know, been around for many, many, many years, but putting that steady stream of savings away, just periodically, just a little bit by little bit by, you know, and over 12 years, I would have accumulated, you know, a large majority, and that would have had that as Zima said, that insurance for if a job would go away. And I've been fortunate enough to not to be in that situation, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what can happen?
Fine.
So
that's
the
fine.
Lessons learned from the recession, I think we all need to take a step back and have this retrospective and says, okay, we on the other side now. Let's begin to take steps today to prepare for the next one. Because bet you, you know, it will happen again. And so
that's
there's
fine.
No reason for anybody under the sound of my voice not to be prepared for the
That's
next
fine.
One. Okay, I want to shift now to the Nevada caucuses. Jima, did you get a chance to watch Mitt Romney and deliver his speech at the end of the caucuses?
No, just kidding. honestly, I can only take probably about 2 minutes of Mitt Romney's voice. And I can't take any more, because he says so many things that are just so not factually correct.
You mean tell me you don't like to hear him sing?
Oh, that was, no, please. That, I mean, I
wanted to compete with President Obama.
I mean, you know, he can't even hold a candle to him singing. So really,
right.
But you know, Newt is a character, and watching him just make up stuff. I mean, they were all just making up stuff. And Ron Paul, I don't know what planet he was on last night.
Right.
But he was somewhere else too. And Santorum was, you know, they played their role very well. Every last one of them, they stayed in their lane and they played their role. And of course, Mitt Romney, you know, he's feeling, you know, as they say, he's reading his press right now. So he's feeling real good and think he just come out and say any old crazy thing about the president. And that's what's going to trip him up because he's so scripted. You know, he says things that are just, like I stated earlier, factually incorrect. And I'm just
fine.
Waiting when he'll be challenged on those things. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for
day
when we'll stop playing the game and somebody will go ahead on and just, you know, come back to him with the correct facts. And then see how he responds,
right.
Which we've already seen that with the interview he had with Laura Ingraham when she says that's a pretty weak argument to be trying to run on when things are getting better. And he says, well, do you have another one? Because, you know, things are going to get better. That's what happens. Well, here we sit. Things are getting better. So
hey, but what do you think? Does Mitt Romney have a chance when it comes to November?
You know something, I'll put it like this. He has the best chance to be the very nominee for the Republican Party. But when it comes to November, you know something, his very campaign, the establishment, his persona, his perspective, his presentation is very, very weak. And to me, he does not present a strong platform. He does not know, as Gina said, the correct facts. You know, he comes up with these strange phase scenarios that he makes, and he thinks people are really going to buy into it. But there's so much dissension still in that party between he and Gingrich until, you know what, I think his focus is going to be more laterally so toward Gingrich because he's going to fear that Gingrich will try to initiate a backstabbing arsenal and to create another third party within the Republican Party regimen, as they say. And he just doesn't have a fighting chance because he has no solid track record. They said even when he was the governor of the state, he was not very productive in doing what he said that he would do. So, you know, based on those facts, his character, his lack of motivation, his stamina, his presentation, his character, he's not going to give a very good challenge to the president. They may have to create a robotic representative from the Republican Party to give the president a fight for his life.
You know, I've been saying for the last couple of years that I believe that the president will be running unopposed for the 2012 election. And so I want to follow up with Newt Gingrich. It seems to me that Newt is a little bitter for two reasons. One, Mitt Romney kind of toe into him on in the Florida debates. And number two is that they didn't get a chance to debate very much over the last couple of days. And so he didn't get a chance to, you know, to be on his high horse. So he held
right.
these press conferences and, you know, and went out on a limb to attack the media so they could kind of pull him in. But he seems to me to be very bitter right now. What do you say about that?
Oh, he's very bitter. He's very asinine. And I think when Donald Trump told him that he was going to support him and fund him, but he turned around and supported Romney, that really, really pushed him over the edge. And you know something? He's so bitter and so asinine to the point he's burning himself out on both ends. People can see it and they can reflect it because rumor had it that he made a statement about Mitt Romney being Mexican, something about him being born in New Mexico. And so, yes. And see, that was a racist statement.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, too, the rebuttal was from the Romney camp because, okay, so when are you going to pull out your Confederate flag and start waving it? Because that is where you stand. So not only is he bitter, asinine, he's an undercover racist, even against a person who would be categorized literally in the same, you know, character as himself. But nevertheless, he looks down on him because of that. And I guess he thought that was going to earn him brownie points that he revealed about him being part Mexican, as they tried to say about President Obama not being an American, knowing full well that Hawaii is one of the 50 states of America.
I mean, it doesn't take a PhD to know that.
Right, right, right. So, Jimmy, what do you think about Newt and his race baiting all the time? I mean, he's trying to pull people in. I mean, he doesn't necessarily say racist terms or use racist language, but he's always on the margin of it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, but here's the thing about what's been happening here in the last couple of years. Actually, ever since the president was running for office, excuse me, and that is that the code language that they used to speak in has been decoded. And so we all know what they mean now when they say certain things. It's no longer a secret. And so
right. And so
now they're being called out on what they've always said. So when Mitt Romney says, well, this isn't the first time I said, you know, I'm not concerned about the poor, you're absolutely right. This isn't the first time you made that statement. But just
That's not the first time
you made that statement, that doesn't make any more right because it's not the first time you made the statement. And the same thing with Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, you know, talks often about, excuse me, what poor people or black people, excuse me, ought to be doing and how black people don't have role models and black people this and thinking that he can say it and that it's okay. And then you have his spokesperson on TV saying that he took some people to see Red Tails, and the reason why Hollywood had to do that movie is because currently there are no black role models. Really?
That is so funny. Really? Wow.
I mean, and he was serious. He this wasn't a parody. This wasn't something on Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert. This man was serious about what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the same thing with Newt. All of their language is being called out. People are paying the close attention. As I stated earlier, there's too many ways to get information now. And so because of all these different ways of getting information, people are able to challenge things immediately as opposed to having to wait for all this, you know, so you know, another week to go by. You hear something right now, and you can challenge somebody on it. So
That's right. They're
not going to be able to continue. And everybody says that this is something to that they're speaking to their base. But in my opinion, how are you? Does that make it okay because they're speaking to their base? So it's okay that there's a group of people out there that feels this way about black people or people of color, and that so because they feel that way, it's okay. Okay.
Right. So Jim, why is it that Rick Santorum is still in the race? Why won't he get out? Or are you thinking that he's waiting on Newt Gingrich to make a final gaffe or mistake and then drop out, and he'll be right there in the balance to challenge Mitt Romney in the long term, or is he just kind of hanging around?
Well, I say this, as long as you got the money
mm-hmm.
and you got a couple people showing up at your little town hall meetings and wherever you at, go on and stay in. You know,
it's pure
comedy for me at this point. So, you know, Mitt Romney is boring. So the Santorums and the Newt Gingriches of the world, they make it all worthwhile. And then you have Ron Paul, who every now and then just comes off and says something extremely of lunacy. But, Rick Santorum, awesome. I mean, and he has a point. There is a couple of states that are coming up in late February and March for Super Tuesday, where you have Newt that's not on the ballot, and so that could really swing in his favor in terms of getting delegates. And at the end of the day, it's a numbers game, right? I mean, that's what was so impressive about, you know, Senator Obama, now President Obama's strategy in 2008 is that he counted, and you said this all the time, Patrick, it was a numbers game. He knew where he had to go to get the numbers.
Right, right.
And however long it's going to take you to get the numbers, you stay in there until you think you can get the numbers.
Exactly.
That's right.
So, Abby, what do you think about Ron Paul? Ron Paul's message is really starting to resonate with a lot of people. What do you think Ron Paul's position will be between now and the election?
You know something, Ron Paul, you know, in between his medications, you know, he can definitely make some sense. He has select timers. And the thing is, with select times, you never know what side of the podium he's going to present from.
Not all timers, but select timers. Okay, I got you.
That's right. And that's the most key element about his character. But, you know, in the sobriety phase, he makes far better sense than Newt Gingrich. And I'm not saying I certainly would not support him, but he makes far better, you know, sense than Newt Gingrich. He is the stupidest man. Let me be quiet. You know, he was a failure during the Bush administration.
Mm.
He's not improved much since then.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Ron Paul makes some solvable points, then all of a sudden he goes out into the, you know, extra galactical universe again, and he starts projecting these old phase anomalies. But I think he would really appease to the senior population of Republicans, the more distinguished faction.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his group is. And I look at Santorum as being more the college yuppie type Republican, you know, appeasing to that younger group. And I look at Newt Gingrich as, you know, people that are probably sitting in the nursing homes and probably remember him from days back when he wasn't quite as plump and was a little bit more pleasant. They look at him and said, oh, he looks like a little Christmas elf. And with Mitt Romney, they would reflect back to George Romney, who was his father, who was decades past during the early 70s, who was the governor of Michigan. And in my most humble of assertion, I hate to say this, is that he's running on a lot of the precepts that his father, George Romney, ran as the governor of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at Ron Paul and the fact that he's you know, gaining national traction, do you think that he's running just enough campaign to kind of keep the money pot going, but you know, you talked about the select timers and the fact that in his sobriety stage, and just enough campaign so when it's time for the general election to really kick off, he kind of tapers off, because his ideology is really nothing that's going to sustain itself for a national campaign. For a partisan campaign, I think it sounds good. I think it plays to, as Jima said, the base. But for the most part, when you're talking about a national campaign, his message won't resonate with everybody.
It won't, in a lot of cases. You're right, because he's got to play for the whole ballpark as opposed to the base, and he does not have that criteria. He doesn't have that charisma and that in-depthness that's needed to captivate the entire movement. He's not. I really predict, and I really predicate my prediction, that when he drops off, that he's going to give his endorsement and his support over to Mitt Romney. I don't think that Newt Gingrich is not going to have a man standing. If Santorum drops out, he's going to give his support to Romney. Newt Gingrich isn't going to get any support from anyone.
So speaking of endorsements, Jimmy, what was the Donald Trump endorsement for Mitt Romney about this week?
They didn't have nothing else to do, and he wanted everybody to know his apprentice show was going to start back up.
Oh, he wanted to inject himself in the camera.
I mean, really.
That's typically when he comes out, right?
That's it. Right. That's typically when he comes out is when it's
that's
time to, you know, for his apprentice show, and that's exactly what he did. And so
that's
he made a media spectacle out of Mitt Romney. Because that endorsement isn't going to garner him any votes with anybody. I mean, it didn't mean anything. It's not like it was, you know, a significant, you know, Republican, you know, conservative person that's standing up for him, you know. And the only reason why, you know, he even did it was for show. I mean, you fly in on your private helicopter and you going out there to Las Vegas to meet with Mitt Romney, and you expect the people who you just said you categorize as not American because, you know, in your phrasing of the poor and not caring about the poor, you said you care about the real Americans, which is the middle class.
Right.
So if I'm poor, then you don't care about me because I'm not middle class. So, and I'm not American. And then you go stand next to Donald Trump. Okay.
Yeah.
What a presentation.
Exactly.
Yeah, what a presentation.
Yeah. So we're approaching the last few minutes of the show. And I want to talk a little bit before we go about the Super Bowl, because it is Super Bowl Sunday. So, Abby, do you have a favorite?
Yes, I'm definitely supporting the New England Patriots.
Okay. And so you think they're going to pull it out?
They're going to pull it out. That's right, because you know what, Manning, you're going down.
Jimmy, what do you think? Who you got, Jimmy, this time?
Well, it's unfortunate that I have to go for the Giants because I do not like Tom Brady on any day.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like him. So, and I really don't like the Giants either because that's Dallas's nemesis and I'm a diehard Dallas fan. But at the end of the day, I do not want – it's really not just Tom Brady. It's really the coach. I really can't stand New England's coach. I think he's pompous. I think he's arrogant. And he gets all this – ugh, like he's, you know, the best coach in the entire world. And I just don't see him that way. So I really don't like him more than anything. So I'm going for the Giants.
Actually, he's going for the Giants. And, you know, really, I wanted Green Bay to win. I was really brokenhearted when they lost that game and fumbled 8 balls. My heart was just broken. So the last ditch effort, I said, okay, Patriots, let's do it. Nah.
Right.
And I was attached to Pittsburgh. So, you know, this is really one of them games like, well, I got to watch it because it's the Super Bowl and it's kind of like a rematch from a couple years ago. And so we got all the history and all that, but, you know, I'm pulling for the Giants.
You know, I'm kind of,
you going for Patrick?
You know, I like both teams, really, to be honest. You know, I like the fact that Brady, he's like a surgeon when it comes to playing football. I mean, he's precise and he has that fierce, go get him attitude. And then I also like the fact that Manning is Eli. He has always been the underdog. He has always been second. But he always seemed to manage to come out on top. Every now and then, people always underestimate him. So I consider him to be the black quarterback in the NFL. In the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, and that's why I kind of got to go with New York in that sense, because of the fact that he is one of us in that particular in that context. And so we always, in a lot of cases, always underestimated, always doubted, if you will, and always had to be the underdog. Now, he has, and if you look at the statistics, in every category, New York should be winning, but yet and still, because of what Gene talked about, this arrogance and this uppity attitude and the pretty boy quarterback, you know, they're a favorite. You know, they might as well win, but I mean, they might win. But at the same time, when you look at on paper and you look at the fact that New York Giants has everything it takes to beat this, you know, it'll be a great win for New York if they do. It'll be the second time that Eli has won a Super Bowl, and it would be the second time that he beat Tom Brady. So it'll be an interesting conversation if New York wins. It won't be that interesting if the Patriots win.
Right, I agree with that. And then Manning would do it in his brother's house.
Exactly.
That's the big thing.
Yeah, that's really, really nice.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
All right, so that's pretty much our show for today. Abbott, I want to give you some final comments. What are your final comments for today?
You know something? You know, I'm just very delighted to be here, you guys. It's been a long time, as New Birth said. And, hey, you know, we covered a lot of interesting areas, but the mainstay of everything that we said, you know, and everything that we believe in is up to the individual, because change happens from within, then it spreads itself abroad, and we're going to keep on trucking, as Eddie Kendricks would say.
Abby, we sure miss you, too. I tell you, I miss you. It's been a pleasure to have you join us today, so I'm glad you were able to participate. Jimmy, your final comments?
My final comments is that as we're nearing this primary season that's gearing up all across the country, I just implore our people to go out and make sure that you have the right documentation for your voter ID, so you can make sure you have what you need come voting day. Don't wait till the day of to see if you're on the right roll. You know, go out, find out the information. There's places out there that will waive the fees for you in terms of what it's going to cost you. So be diligent, be vigilant, and be timely about it. You know, this is a serious time, and as slow as things have taken to turn around for us in the economy, it could go back the other way very quickly if we don't have the right people in the positions that's going to be making the decisions. And so we all have a part to play in this process. And so I just say, you know, get registered and make sure that your vote will be counted on voting day.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to the Motor City Maharani, Abby Phelps. We miss you. We're glad to have you join us today. And, of course, my special guest and co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's A-S-K-J-E-M-A. You're listening to K current events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark our site and visit my blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. Now you're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.